And diversity, diversity.
Here, a cause of confusion.
Oh, trash is bored.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another Office Hours. And I have to say, this morning has been one of the most fun days on Twitter for quite some time. So, in fact, it's been one of the most fun news cycles, possibly since 2016. It's really quite remarkable because yesterday, Keir Starmer gave a speech which is widely being compared with a speech given by Enoch Powell back in 1968. You have to see this to believe it, really. Here is my Twitter feed, and I'll just show you. Starmer's migration speech, completely different to Enoch Powell, says Yvette Cooper, who's the Home Secretary. Here's Owen Jones absolutely freaking out. The Fishhook theory of the far left, far right, and centrists united. We're going to watch some clips in a second. Here is the one that really caught my eye. This is the Scottish paper, The National. It's literally got Starmer morphing, sorry, semagogue, transforming into Enoch Powell. Really, really quite amazing. I had a bit of fun with a post. Boss, no, I can't do it. Feel it. You know you want to. Think of the votes. But outright racism, Tony. We're Labour. Look at Badenoch. She's on the ropes. Say it. Say it. It's quite amazing. It's quite amazing. The thing is, for those of you in our circles, Oliver Semagogue has so drummed into us that the word morph is wrong, that any use of it, we're just shit scared to say it, lest the wrath of Oliver come down. So, one just assumes that every single use of it is wrong, you know. What I'm going to do is we're going to watch a couple of clips, and then we're going to, I thought we'd watch through the whole speech to see if there's any sneaky stuff in there that we've missed. So we're going to watch the whole speech. One of the things I do like about Labour and Starmer's government, for better or for worse, is the 70s aesthetic. I like the wooden panelling and the 70s kind of letter styling. It's kind of got a retro feel about it, and I kind of dig that. I'm into my mid-century modern vibe, as people know. Although I don't think many people saw Starmer's mid-century German arc. I should mention that, this was in some respects called I did say this back in, it was July, look. Expect Starmer, hold me to it in a year or so. Illegal immigration reduced. Legal immigration reduced. Potholes fixed. Woke put away. And of those, honestly, it's looking like the potholes is the least likely to happen, right? And okay, if it means immigration coming down and woke gone, I'll take the potholes, okay? Anyway, the left is absolutely freaking out about this speech. And before we watch it, I think it's worth seeing some of the reaction, because to call it hysterical is an understatement.
Why is that phrase so inflammatory to some people?
Because Enoch...
Now, why is that phrase so inflammatory to some people?
Because Enoch Powell, the racist Tory in the late 60s...
1968.
His infamous Rivers of Blood speech talked about people feeling like strangers in their country. He meant white people, strangers in their country.
Yeah. And?
Well, it's kind of sickening. Now, either he's got some young, naive person down the street, or he's got somebody who has gone where they should never have tripped. He's off his moral molehill. Now when he wants to accuse the Conservative Party or Reform of racism and bigotry, they will be able to turn around and say, what about you? What have you said? He's completely lost any moral ground he had as Prime Minister. It's gone.
Then there was also on the same show with Susanna Reid and old Richard Madeley there.
5 minutes sounding to a lot of critics like he could have been Nigel Farage. And the criticism is he actually sounded like Enoch Powell. So I repeat the question, which is, did you know about this island of strangers line? And is it one that you agree with and would use?
Well, I think what you heard the Prime Minister say at the beginning of the clip that you played was to talk about the diverse nation, and he celebrated that.
Cooper, I'm sorry, at the beginning, for 5 minutes of his speech, from the beginning of his...
In my head canon, Madeley is just thinking, based. In my head canon, that is, but...
speech for 5 minutes, he did not talk about the benefits of immigration. And then he used this phrase... island of strangers. So I repeat the question for the third time. Is it a phrase you knew about, that you recognise, and that you would use?
No, but I think that's the problem. The immediate phrase that he said immediately before it was to talk about the diverse nation. And then he said, yeah, immigration needs to be controlled and managed. And I think there's a real challenge.
He said we risk becoming an island of strangers. And I just ask again, did you know he was going to use that echo?
No, but
of
it's
Enoch
the point
Powell.
Is that it,
right.
This is.
And would you use that phrase?
I honestly think the point that he is making here is about we have to have controlled and managed. We have to have people who are able to speak English, that we have to make sure that we've got rules that are respected and enforced. I think all of those are things that Good Morning Britain viewers would agree with. I think those are things that are really important across the country.
Well, we end up getting tangled up in language,
where actually what we need is to make sure that we're bringing in serious policies that can bring control and order to the system, that can make sure that we've
order.
Got a system that's working.
Control and order.
Rather than one where there's always overseas recruitment rather than training in the UK and the system isn't properly managed.
Secretary, you invoke this morning viewers, Good Morning Britain viewers. I can assure you that they can always tell when a politician doesn't answer the question. And one of the things they will have watched over the last 2.5 minutes is you not answering Susanna's question, but answering questions that she didn't actually ask.
Who'd have thought Susanna Reid was the woke one all along? Let's have a look at some of the Reform reaction. Here is Anne Whittacombe. Let's have a look at Anne Whittacombe here. I thought this was truly pathetic from Whittacombe. Anne Whittacombe here. Honestly, I just hate Conservatives. And while I'm finding that, I just want you to cast your mind back 5 years. Okay. And remember, okay, today Starmer is being memed as Enoch Powell by both the right and the left. Okay. People all down my Twitter feed are sharing Powell memes with Starmer on the right. And then on the left, they're having that almighty freako. While that was happening, okay, 5 years ago, Boris Johnson's government smashed every single record, okay, on third world immigration, importing more people in that five-year period than ever before. This is something like 6 million people under the Johnson administration. And from 2010, the end of Gordon Brown, until now, okay, it's more than the previous 1,000 years. That's how many people came in under the Tories. And then to cap it all off, they appointed Rishi Sunak as the Chancellor and printed this 50 pence piece which said diversity built Britain. So we've come a long way. All I'm saying is we've come a very long way since 2020. Okay, it's 2025 now. Never forgive the Tories for that. And honestly, if I live to see that party destroyed, my life's work will be done, honestly. Anyway, speaking of useless containment parties, here's a reform.
That we would make would be people coming to work in the NHS, and people are coming to work in care, providing and only providing that we were making serious efforts to skill our own workforce in the meantime. Okay. I want a timetable.
So just to put the context here, the Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, has said that she's stopping third world or foreign immigrants coming in to do care jobs. Okay, she said she's stopping that starting today or whatever. Okay, the left are freaking out, calling her the most far right Home Secretary we've ever had. And Reform's response is to actually talk about how we need those foreign care workers. Let's just listen to what Whittaker is saying here.
The exceptions that we would make would be people coming to work in the NHS, and people are coming to work in care, providing and only providing that we were making serious efforts to skill our own workforce in the meantime. Okay. I want a timetable from the Prime Minister.
But those coming only for care, not even for the NHS, that was 145,000 people last year. So you would still have over 100,000 people coming into the UK to do those jobs.
You would have over 100,000 people in the immediacy. Yes, that's why I keep asking for a timetable for skilling our own workforce.
Well, and I'm just saying to you that lots of people think when Reform say we would freeze non-essential immigration, lots of people hear that and they think, right, well, that means there's going to be a stop to all these tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people coming in. That's not what you're proposing, is it?
What we hang on, there is a difference between freezing immigration and zero immigration. And we've never signed up to zero immigration. And
just why are you saying this on the day that Starmer's given this speech? You say we were never up for zero immigration. What are you doing?
We have said right from the start, NHS and care workers, we will have to phase. But we will phase. And that's why I say again, very boringly, I want to hear from the Prime Minister what the timetable is for skilling our own workforce.
Yeah, you mentioned
not just give in. Not just give in.
You mentioned a cap there, and obviously that's something that Reform and the Conservatives are both talking about. What would your cap be? What's the most appropriate number?
Well, that is something which you're going to have to wait for us to announce, I'm afraid, you know, because we've got solid experience.
I mean, it's just useless, absolutely useless. Anyway, before we watch the speech itself from Starmer, and we're going to watch it in full, and I want to watch the Q&A as well, because a very interesting part of this story is the reaction of the media and those people in the media who still haven't got the memo that there's a new script now. And, you know, this is happening, basically. The diversity built Britain and all of that bullshit, that was 5 years ago. That was belonged to a different era. There's a new zeitgeist, a new script, okay? But not everybody in the media has got this memo. And of course, there is one set of vested interests in this country who want low, who want kind of cheap labor coming into the country. And that is big business, okay? There's already headlines saying that Starmer's under pressure from business on his immigration policy, okay? It was always, always, always about capital, big C capital and business driving down the cost of labor. It was never about some clandestine cultural Marxist plot, yada, yada, yada. It was always capital. Okay. And this is something that if you still believe those kind of old narratives that people used to tell, you have to actually see what has driven immigration in the history of this country. Okay, it was really Thatcherism and then Blairism that gave rise to this in the first place, business-friendly policies and the crushing of the unions. Okay, the fact that that twat that we saw at the start and the left have been captured by these interests now, or they've been brainwashed, or they've been tamed, or they've been, you know, forced into a position where they're saying these things, doesn't change the fact that the ultimate driver comes from big business. Okay, this is something that people everywhere need to get a handle on. All right. Before we get going, though, I want to play Trivium ad to remind people to buy courses. And then when we come back, we're going to watch this speech in full, and I'm going to analyze it on the fly, because the a couple of minutes has got all the headlines. I want to see what else is in there to see how serious this government is about actually making change in this country. Okay, Trivium.
Now from the Academic Agency.
All right, so let's see. Let's bring him in. Where is he?
Absolutely central.
Full farce of the law. Okay, here we go. Full force of the law.
Good morning. Today we publish a white paper on immigration, a strategy absolutely central to my plan for change that will finally take back control of our borders and close the book on a squalid chapter for our politics, our economy, and our country. Take back control. Everyone knows that slogan, and everyone knows what it meant on immigration, or at least that's what people thought. Because what followed from the previous government, starting with the people who used that slogan, was the complete opposite.
Fact! Absolute fact!
Between 2019 and 2023, even as they were going round our country, telling people with a straight face that they would get immigration down, net migration quadrupled.
Fact!
Until in 2023, it reached nearly 1 million. That's
disgusting.
About the population of Birmingham.
It's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable that it takes him to say this, that it's got that bad, that Labour are forced to come out and say this. I hope you're happy, Boris. Wherever the fuck you are, Johnson. Oh, I'd never forgive him for what he did to this country.
Our second largest city. That's not control. It's chaos. And look, they must answer for themselves.
Can I just say, right, this speech here, the fact that the Prime Minister is having to come out and say this is vindication for every single person who's run a channel like mine and Carl and all the people there, all the people on Twitter, all the people who've been banging this drum, all these years going back, all the way back to Enoch Powell, never gave up banging the drum on this. And now the system is absolutely forced to address it in the face. Okay? This twat was calling us all far right 6 months ago. Let's carry on.
But I don't think that you can do something like that by accident. It was a choice. A choice made even as they told you, told the country, they were doing the opposite. A one-nation experiment in open borders, conducted on a country that voted for control. Well, no more. Today, this Labour government is shutting down the lab. The experiment is over. We will deliver what you've asked for time and again, and we will take back control of our borders.
You better bloody do it.
And let me tell you why. Because I know on a day like today, people who like politics will try to make this all about politics, about this or that strategy, targeting these voters, responding to that party.
Listen, I don't care if it's containment. I don't care if, like, if they're doing it to destroy reform. I don't care if they're doing it to maintain power. What I want is the borders actually controlled. Okay? If he comes out and says this and then doesn't do it, then absolutely they should be zero seated. Okay? But if he does actually do it, I don't give a shit what else they do. Because this is the, this, I mean, there's two massive things that need to happen. Okay? Number one, this, what he's talking about now. Number two is the immediate firing of Ed Miliband. Okay? And if all you Labour spads who watch this channel, okay, are watching this now, what are you waiting for? Just fire Miliband today. Okay? Because once that net zero bullshit is gone, so many of these plans will be more doable. Okay? Every single thing that Tone wants to do requires a fully functioning electricity grid. Okay? And a viable energy policy. And Miliband is fucking it up as we speak. Okay? Once Miliband has gone and they have a sensible energy policy and this happens, then the country is back on, you know, some sort of sensible and centered track. And the stuff we've been talking about for years will actually start to happen. Okay? This is a positive step. He actually has to do it, though. And absolutely, people should hold his feet to the fire and make sure that he does it. And what reform should be doing, rather than, you know, mizzling around the edges like Whittingham was doing, or being wet like Farage is being, it's actually just going one step further and saying, actually, okay, it's good that you're doing this, Starmer, but it's not good enough. We need re-migration. Okay, that's what reform should be doing. So let's carry on.
No. I'm doing this because it is right, because it is fair, and because it is what I believe in. Let me put it this way. Nations depend on rules, fair rules.
They depend on the law and facing the full force of the law.
Sometimes they're written down, often they're not. But either way, they give shape to our values, guide us towards our rights, of course, but also our responsibilities, the obligations we owe to each other. Now, in a diverse nation like ours, and I celebrate that, these rules become even more important. Without them, we risk becoming an island of strangers.
There it is, the island of strangers. And this is being called the island of strangers speech in the news.
A nation that walks forward together. So when you have an immigration system that seems almost designed to permit abuse.
The thing is, he said we risk becoming islands of strangers. It's already happened. I remember a couple of years back, right, taking a walk through London in up near Edgware Road. In fact, I walked from Baker Street to Edgware Road and kind of got lost. I was looking for my car, so I took a wrong turn and ended up in some neighborhoods I wouldn't usually go in. My God, if you want to talk about islands of strangers, you do that walk from Baker Street to Edgware Road and kind of get lost down some of the side streets. Shithole isn't the word. You know, oh, it's just devastating places. And then occasionally you'll stumble on some side street where there's a pocket of, like, somehow a pocket of, like, white people who still live there. And it's like, you know, Betfred, like a betting shop. With a really dingy, rundown pub opposite it. And, you know, oh, it's just devastating. It's just horrible, some of those places. And then this is the bizarre thing about London, right? Then you go two steps down and you get onto, like, a commercial high street, and it's like, you know, two Michelin star Japanese restaurant, you know, massive mansion that some Russian lives in. It's like such a city of contrast in London, okay? But you can bet your bottom dollar that none of those different people in those different streets know each other. Then you walk down another street and some bloke is living in a council house, has got his like Muslim prayer or some, you know, some Pakistani song or something blaring out of his window. And he's walking down the street, one of those long white sheets. Okay. And he doesn't speak English. This is just the reality of London today. And not just London. You can go to many other places. He mentioned Birmingham. Try taking a walk in some of those places. You know, and again, in Birmingham, there's a nice bit of Birmingham. Oh, well, I say nice. It's like a glass monstrosity with, you know, a Pizza Express here and a, you know, Byron Burger there, right? But you go a couple of, you know, a couple of doors down from there, and again, it's like you're in a foreign country. Anyway, let's carry on.
That encourages some businesses to bring in lower paid workers rather than invest in our young people. Or simply one that is sold by politicians to the British people on an entirely false premise. Then you're not championing growth. You're not championing justice or however else people defend the status quo. You're actually contributing to the forces that are slowly pulling our country apart. So yes, I believe in this. I believe we need to reduce immigration significantly.
Yes.
That's why some of the policies in this white paper go back nearly 3 years. Why I told the Labour Party conference, taking back control is a Labour argument. And why, most importantly of all, inward migration is already falling with this government. It's about fairness. And look, I mean, migration is part of Britain's national story. We talked last week about the great rebuilding of this country after the war. Migrants were part of that. And they...
Well, a minor part of it. Let's not go too far, Keir, right? They were a minor part of it. They didn't actually, like, rebuild the country, let's face it. That was done by, you know, the indigenous population in the vast majority. But yeah, there were a couple of thousand people from Jamaica and, you know, 10,000 people from India or something. They were part of the story. Okay, yeah.
You make a massive contribution today, and you will never hear me denigrate that. But when people come to our country, they should also commit to integration, to learning our language. And our system should actively distinguish between those that do and those that don't.
Very Gordon Brown, this. Gordon Brown was always very big on this in kind of late era New Labour, or even under Blair as well. This was always one of Brown's, so this is kind of a Brownite side to Starmer.
I think that's fair. Equally, Britain must compete for the best talent in the world, in science, in technology, in healthcare. You can't simply pull up a drawbridge, let nobody in, and think that's an economy that would work.
You see, this is where reform should say, actually, we've already got enough people here. We don't need to bring in more and more and more people. But that's not what Anne Whittingham said, sadly.
That would hurt the pay packets of working people. Without question. But at the same time, we do...
How would it? How would that hurt the pay packets of working people, as you put it? I'd love to see that because, you know, just basic economics says you increase the labour supply and that increases competition for jobs, which then decreases the salary because it, you know, puts the employer in the driving seat. So if you make scarcity for labour, the wages go up. And I always, if Starmer was sitting here, I always go back to the example of the Black Death, where the population was literally devastated in half. Wages doubled. That's just raw econ. So I don't understand the argument that people's wages would suffer if you didn't, you know, have any immigration at all. Just don't get that argument, period. Wages will go up. That's just a fact.
I have to ask why parts of our economy seem almost addicted to importing cheap labour, rather than investing in the skills of people who are here and want a good job in their community. Sectors like engineering, where visas have rocketed while apprenticeships have plummeted. Is that fair to Britain? Is that fair to young people weighing up their future to miss out on those apprentices? To see colleges in their community.
This is good shit from Starmer. I like this part of the speech.
Almost entirely dedicated to one-year courses for overseas students? No, I don't think that it is. And truth be told, I don't think anybody does. Yet that is the Britain this broken system has created. So as this white paper sets out, every area of the immigration system, work, family and study, will be tightened up so we have more control. Skill requirements raised to degree level. English language requirements across all routes, including for dependents. The time it takes...
Dependents, very key thing to focus on.
...takes to acquire settled status, extended from 5 years to 10. And enforcement tougher than ever.
They've doubled the requirements from 5 years to 10 years. That was on the front of a lot of papers yesterday. The left-wing papers didn't like that.
Because fair rules must be followed. Now, make no mistake, this plan means migration will fall. That's a promise. But I want to be very clear on this. If we do need to take further steps, if we do need to do more to release pressure on housing and our public services, then mark my words, we will.
Look at that. Very, very, this is a milestone speech because it's the Prime Minister admitting for the first time that immigration puts pressure on public services. Immigration puts pressure on housing. Okay? This was stuff that we have all been saying for years and years and years that was denied by the Economist, by the FT, by the, you know, by the Times, by people like Starmer, by the entire system. All of these arguments were coded as quote unquote far right even a couple of years ago. And now it's being admitted by the Prime Minister. Okay. It's a watershed speech, whichever way you know, you may hate Starmer. Okay. And I still don't forgive him for Southport either. Okay. But the fact that the system is admitting this is a major moment. It's a major moment in the politics of this country.
But it's not just about numbers, because the chaos of the previous government also changed the nature of immigration in this country. Fewer people who make a strong economic contribution, more who work in parts of our economy that put downward pressure on wages.
What Starmer is trying to get at there is that back in the kind of Blair boom, a lot of the people who came in obviously were skilled EU visa people, Polish plumbers, you know all the stereotypes. It was those sorts of people. Okay. And I'm not saying that was good either. What's happened under the Tories and, you know, since Cameron, but especially since Johnson and Sunak, is basically a massive increase in what do they call it? The gig economy. The Deliveroo driver, the Uber Eats worker. Who the fuck are these people? Anyway, let's carry on.
So perhaps the biggest shift in this white paper is that we will finally honour what take back control meant and begin to choose who comes here.
I mean... The extent of Tory betrayal is ridiculous because what he's saying is absolutely true. Brexit was sold as take back control. Almost everybody watching this voted for that. I voted Remain, of course, but almost everybody watching who voted for Brexit voted to take back control. I remember Farage standing with the hordes of, of people on the poster coming in from Turkey. Okay, I remember that. Everybody remembers it. The Tories got in and then said Brexit gives us an opportunity to become a more global Britain, and then promptly let in 6 million people. 6 million people. It's just astonishing that they did that. Zero seats. The party needs to be obliterated to the moon. They need to be shot in a rocket to the moon and never be allowed back into British politics.
So that migration works for our national interest. You know, this is where the whole debate is skewed. As if some people think controlling immigration is reining in a sort of natural freedom, rather than the basic and reasonable responsibility of government to make choices that work for a nation's economy. And for years, this seems to have muddled our thinking. But let me be clear, it ends now. We will create a migration system that is controlled, selective, and fair. A clean break with the past that links access to visas directly to investment in homegrown skills. So that if a business wants to bring people in from abroad, they must first invest in Britain. But also, so settlement becomes a privilege that is earned, not a right. Easier if you make a contribution, if you work, pay in, and help rebuild our country. Now, some people may even be against that. But I think for the vast majority of people in this country, that is what they have long wanted to see. An immigration system that is fair, that works for...
I just want to remind you a second, okay? Here's Labour messaging. Backing British workers. He's white, 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 she's white. Here is Tory messaging. She's the leader, and these are the people to the fore. It's just remarkable how this has happened. It's just remarkable.
National interest, and that restores common sense and control to our borders. That is what this white paper will deliver. Lower net migration, higher skills, backing British workers. The start of repairing our social contract, which the chaos and cynicism of the last government did so much to undermine. Thank you. I will now take a number of questions.
Okay, I'm very interested to see what the questions from the press are here. Very interested indeed. My cigar has run out. Damn it. I was so excited. I've been so excited, friends. My cigar. I need another cigar. Okay, I'm going to play my rhetoric advert. By the time I come back, we're going to watch the Q&A session. I'm extremely interested to watch this historic speech. All right, I'll be back in a second.
Friends, Romans, countrymen, come this way. Lend me your ears. Secrets of ancient rhetoric can now be yours for a trifling sum. The art of persuasive argument is all around us. In fact, we are surrounded by it. We live in a rhetorical age, but this is seldom taught and even more seldom explained. It is not for you to know, they said. The master of grammar knows how to write with clarity, precision, and correctness. The master of logic knows how to disarm his opponents with reason alone, and both can be powerful adversaries. But the master of rhetoric can outflank both, caring as he does little for their rules and even less for their defeated tears. The master of grammar...
It does build. If you're wondering, cigar fans, it was Nate Jupman Connoisseur 1 that I just finished. Beautiful, elegant cigar with a kind of smooth, buttery, shortbread vibe. I absolutely chugged through it. It usually takes about an hour. I did it in 38 minutes. And now I'm moving on to Ramon Alone's Small Club Corona for the Q&A.
From the media, I've got a hopefully accurate list here, starting with Chris Mason, BBC.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Prime Minister. Chris Mason, BBC News. Let's be clear. Are you promising today that net migration will fall every year between now and the next election, come what may?
Well, I'm promising it will fall significantly, and I do want to get it down by the end of this Parliament significantly. That is what this plan is intended to achieve. The complete
note, by the way, the Blair Claw is coming out, clearly under the tutelage of the Dark Lord here.
It's opposite of what you saw in the last 4 years. It is frankly incredible that net migration quadrupled in four short years to nearly 1 million. This white paper, these plans bring it back into control, make sure it's controlled, that is selective.
Tasting notes for the Ramon Alone's Small Club Corona. More of a kind of deep, fruity flavour than the kind of shortbread of the Upmun. This has a kind of, I would say, a deep currant through line with some sweet spices. Ramon Alone's is a beautiful brand. Beautiful brand. Let's carry on.
That we decide who comes to this country and that it is fair. And that's what we will do. Significant reduction in immigration. And as I've indicated, if it becomes necessary to take further measures, then that's what we will do. Thank you. Robert, ITV.
Robert Beston, ITV. Prime Minister, you know that countries that want to grow are in a global race for top talent. Your number one priority is growth. Haven't you shot yourself in the foot by insisting that those who want to be citizens now have to live here?
Fuck off, Peston. Shut up, Peston. Twat. Anyway, let's carry on. That was a bit of inner anger from Starmer with his pen, you know.
Twice as long as those who want to be American citizens. And if I may, we've just heard that there will be a 90-day massive reduction in the tariffs that China and America are imposing on each other. Are you relieved that at least temporarily they've laid down their economic arms?
Well, let me take both those points, although I'm not encouraging two questions each, because we've got to just get through this.
Yes, fairness. Full force of the law, Peston. Who do you think you are? One question each.
On the growth question, but on the growth question, I do think this is worth taking some time on, because the theory that higher migration numbers necessarily leads to higher growth has been tested in the last 4 years. So we've had the highest net migration when the last government lost control to nearly 1 million, and stagnant growth. And so that link doesn't hold.
This is remarkable. This is like watching one of my videos from 4 years ago or something. Or like Carl, or like, these are things that only we used to say. I honestly, it's gobsmacking. It really is.
On that evidence. The second thing is that this white paper is not just a white paper on immigration. It's also a white paper that deals with skills and training. And one of the reasons that we've had stagnant growth, in my view, for years, is because we've underinvested chronically in skills and growth. So by putting skills and growth into the same plan as migration, which is something businesses have been asking for years, you actually answer the growth question as well. And I should say, as a footnote to that, as you heard in the speech and you'll see in the white paper, in relation to high talent, where we want the very best into the country, we will have routes to get that talent into this country. And I think there's real potential for us to do so in the current environment, and we intend to do so. On the question of the China tariffs, I just saw something flash up in the room back there. I'm not across the complete detail. I'm very pleased, obviously, that we struck our trade deal with the US last week, which will be measured in very many thousands of jobs and billions of pounds into our economy. Thank you, Robert. Sam from Sky. Sam.
Sam Kerr, Sky News. Prime Minister, just to pick up on growth and migration,
One of the reasons that we've had a laxer migration policy for years is because of basically the Treasury view, successive chancellors, their fiscal rules, and the way that that interacts with the official forecasts means it's always been an easy win to have more growth by having more people in the country. What's your message today to the Treasury, to the OBR, and are you doing anything to actually change the way that they work and look at all this stuff?
Honestly, the whole meme about Richard Spencer secretly being Starmer, it's like, fucking hell. He's literally coming out with immigration doesn't lead to growth. The economic argument is bollocks. It's amazing to watch the narrative just have the plug pulled in real time.
Calculate the cost-benefit analysis of growth and migration.
Yeah, well, thank you, Sam. Just succinctly, and then adding to the answer I just gave. Firstly, the pure theory, if you like, that simply higher migration numbers necessarily leads to higher growth, I think has been tested in the last 4 years. We quadrupled in actually a very short period of time. And, you know, I think whatever political persuasion you are, it is quite extraordinary that net migration quadrupled in 4 years. We've never seen that before in this country, but growth didn't shift. It stayed stagnant. Secondly, this point about skills and migration, what businesses have been calling out for a long time is link migration to the skills and training that we need in this country. In the past, governments have done sort of knee-jerk reductions without making that link. We're making that link in this paper. Which is really important in terms of where we go with the economy, because I do think it's underinvestment in those areas that's caused a lot of the problem. The other thing that the paper is doing is readjusting the model, because it's got to a place now where there's many more low-skilled jobs rather than high-skilled jobs. So by adjusting the threshold for skills, this allows migration to be in the areas of high skills, which are more likely to make a significant contribution to our economy. Thank you very much, Sam. I've got Gary from Channel 4.
Thank you very much, Prime Minister. Have you been on a bit of a journey yourself on this? Did you used to believe that higher immigration led to higher growth? Would Keir Starmer a few years ago have talked about an island of strangers? Are you one of the people who now thinks that Article 8 of the ECHR is actually a problem?
Have you been radicalised by Twitter, Keir Starmer?
And not something that's just exaggerated by other people.
Well, Gary, thank you very much. I invite you to dig out my conference speech at Labour Party conference. I know you remember them all. But 3 years ago now, I think it was, when I made the very political argument that I've made this morning, which is that take back control, understanding why you need control, selection, and fair immigration, is a Labour argument. And once you've dug out that transcript, there's then the speech I made to the CBI, I think, about 3 years ago, making the same argument in relation to business, saying too many businesses, in my view, are too dependent on migration rather than training and skilling up people in this country. And that was, I was signalling to the CBI then that would change under a Labour government. So there's a core consistency through here. On Article 8, yeah, we do want to ensure that the right balance is made in migration cases in relation to the national...
Victoria Willings asking in the chat, is this a white pill? Is it? I mean, what else could it be? What else? I mean, seriously, what else could it be? The Prime Minister is coming out and saying all the things we've been saying for years. Okay. Yes, it's too late. Yes, it's, you know, should have been 5 years ago. Yes, Boris shouldn't have opened the floodgates. Yes, Southport was regrettable and all the rest of it. But come on. This is a massive shift in British politics. It's a massive shift. In many ways, you could argue that this moment represents the fruition of years and years of agitating that many hundreds of people have been doing. You know, and I mean, okay, you know the social media stars, but people behind the scenes and. You know, the people at the Migration Observatory in Oxford and, you know, all sorts of people have basically pushed this to the point where the powers that be can no longer, you know, and when I say the powers that be, it's obvious that this has come from the Dark Lord, Blair himself. It's obvious that whatever orders Starmer is under are the same orders that Mark Carney in Canada is under as well. It's obvious that they're doing this to maintain their control and their power. But look, if it means this party being in and getting the results we want, that's better than having a repeat of what we saw under the Tories. Frankly, talk the talk and promised us everything, and then literally did the biggest betrayal under the sun. And one of the reasons why I have always maintained that Labour are more likely to actually do something than the Tories is because when New Labour were in last time, they did introduce the hostile environment. They did reject 90% of asylum seekers in the second and the third Blair ministries and under Brown. They did actually reduce immigration under Blair and Brown as well. After the initial increase, they quickly scrambled because the BNP, if you remember back then, the BNP were on the rise. Okay? So they did actually do more. They didn't do enough, obviously, but they actually got some results. You had David Blunkett talking about machine gunning prisoners and all of that sort of stuff. They did actually put things in place. And if you have a look at what the Tories did to jack up those immigration numbers, is that they liberalized and took out the rules that New Labour had put in. They made it easier to get a visa. They made it easier for students to come over. They got rid of the hostile environment, hug a bloody hoodie. They got rid of ASBOs. And I've been saying this for a long time, okay? And the reason I keep on saying it is because you've got to remember that so many people that get in front of your eyes are paid operatives of the fucking Tory party. They work for Boris Johnson. They're part of the Tory machine. They're part of think tanks that are funded by the people who fund the Tories. That's why I have to keep on going on and on about this, because people have this tendency to just slip back. Oh, did they just slip back? Oh, look at Robert Jendrick, he's based, blah 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 blah. Whereas what I want is an actual result from people who know how this system works, who built the system, who, when they pull the lever of the machine will bloody work. Rather than the Tories, who actually designed policy that was built to fail. Okay, if you remember Suella Braverman, when she was the Home Secretary under Sunak, okay, she wrote a letter outlining the fact that if they wanted to do the Rwanda plan, and if they wanted to do all the things that the Tories were promising they do, this needed to happen, that needed to happen, that needed to happen, that needed to happen. And Braverman showed, she actually exposed the fact that the Tory party were designing policy to fail. And then they were like, oh, our hands are tied. The European Courts of Human Rights have said no, or this court has said no, or it's been rejected by the Supreme Court. Okay, I wrote an essay called the magical Blair machine or something. You can have a look on my Substack. And I said, look, when this lot get in, the machine magically will work for them in a way that it did not work for the Tories. Part of the reason for that is that they built the machine. But the other part of the reason for that is that the Tories are cynical cowards, okay, who literally did things that they knew would be stopped or blocked. Right, because they were throwing red meat with no intention whatsoever of actually achieving a result. Remember, the Labour base are commies. The Labour base are people like Owen Jones and Ash Sarkar and these sorts of people. So when they want to throw out red meat, they'll talk about nationalizations, or they'll do very left-wing things, or some of the Ed Miliband bullshit. That's their red meat. Labour don't throw red meat to the right. They act in order to stop the quote-unquote right from rising, or to keep somebody like Farage out. So they're doing it for a different reason, but that means actually achieving real results. Okay, and they may not get it down all the way to zero, or it may not, but I suspect it will be quite a drastic reduction from the highs that we saw under Boris Johnson. I mean, really, it needs to, it needs, really does need to be zero, to be honest. But if you don't think this is a step, like just the fact that he's coming out and saying immigration does not lead to growth, the fact that he's saying we need to train British workers, okay, that this country is for British people, all of these sorts of things that he's saying is a massive sea change from the sort of shit that the system was coming out with just a couple of years ago.
Interest. There's a balance set out in legislation already. That needs to be adjusted, in my view, and that's what we will do. Thank you, Gary. Chris Hope, sorry. There's a lot of Chris's.
Chris Hope, GB News. Prime Minister, we've been here before, haven't we? There have been three Immigration Acts since 2014. The Immigration Act in 2014 and 2016 both aimed to reduce immigration. They both failed. Why on earth should GB News viewers think you're going to succeed? And why not give us a promise right now? Why give us a fixed target right now, not a promise, so we can judge you on success? The Tories at least did that, but they failed.
Well, look, the difference here, this is the most comprehensive plan that has been put forward. It's been forward to end the Tory sort of wild open borders experiment that we have had. You're right about that. And it looks at all routes, and it's comprehensive, and it does the hard yards of linking skills and business to what we need to do with the economy. So it's not...
The thing is, Gordon Brown did actually reduce immigration. Okay, and I say that as somebody who's just spent hours and hours looking over that chart over and over again. They did. Blair and Brown reduced immigration in the mid-2000s. You can have a look at the chart, and then it shot up again under Cameron. Theresa May actually did bring it down when she was the Home Secretary, but not when she was the Prime Minister, when she was the Home Secretary. Fair play to Theresa May, she did bring it down, but not, she didn't hit her target. And then for some reason, everything goes crazy. After Brexit, everything just goes insane, the chart, okay? But they did actually manage to curb immigration. And in terms of illegal immigration, that's asylum and refugees and so on, but they practically reduced it to zero under Blair and Brown. All of that problem, the boats crisis and all of that, is purely happened under the Tories. It is what it is. The facts are what they are.
A narrow look just at the numbers. It puts them in their proper context. On the question, which we do want to significantly reduce migration, I'm absolutely making clear that's what it will do, and that if we need...
The other really significant thing, which we haven't talked about, by the way, is that Starmer is talking about reducing legal immigration, not simply stop the boats bullshit, okay? He's talking about actual legal numbers coming in. Hugely significant.
We need to go further, we will. So that's the promise I make to your viewers. I don't think it's sensible to put a hard-edged cap on it. That has been done in one form or another for the best part of 10 years by different prime ministers. The only thing that links those prime ministers and the various caps or quotas or limits they put in place is every single one of them failed. And therefore, going down the failed route is not a sensible way for me. As with everything that I do, serious, pragmatic, looking at the things that will actually make a material difference. Thank you, Chris. Jerry from The Times.
Jerry Scott from The Times. What is your message to the 9 million inactive adults in the UK at the moment who might not think that they should take work in a care home, for example, and also to some of your Labour MPs who might be...
Good question.
...squeamish about Labour government taking a tough line on immigration?
Well, firstly, that's acknowledged within that 9 million. There are some people who can't work, and we need to be clear about that from the start. But there are others who can. And as we've set out in our welfare provisions, the principles are clear.
We're reopening the workhouses!
Where people can't work and are unlikely to be able to work, they should be protected and supported. But where people can get into work, they should be supported. The current system does the opposite. And so we will support them into work with a £1 billion package, the right to try, and measures like that.
Think of how insane it is, right? 9 million people not in the workforce, but yet they imported 6 million people on top of that. How the fuck does that happen? 9 million people aren't in the workforce, but they imported 6 million people. It's just a joke.
And that if you can work, you should work. And I do think that this white paper should be seen in conjunction with what we're doing on welfare. And on squeamishness, I actually think that the Labour Party has as core values the idea that immigration should be controlled, that it should be selective. We should be choosing who we want, higher skills, the high talent routes into our country. And it must be fair. They're basic Labour arguments and concepts for many, many years. Thank you. I've got Jack from The Sun. Jack.
Thank you, Prime Minister. You said just now this is a comprehensive plan to bring down legal migration. You also said in the election you had a comprehensive plan to bring down illegal migration. And so far it seems that isn't working. Small boat crossings are going up on your watch. So why should voters think that your plan to bring down legal migration will fare any better, especially given you're considering an EU youth mobility scheme, which could actually increase it?
Well, let's tackle that head on, because nobody should be getting in a small boat to cross over the Channel and illegally entering this country. The last government lost control of the borders. It falls to this government to clear up that mess in the same way we're clearing up all the other messes that they left behind. I am convinced that the way to do that is to take down the gangs that are running the vile trade. And for that reason, we've drafted and put before Parliament a borders bill, which follows through on the promises I made, which is we need to give law enforcement greater powers. Going down the counter-terrorism powers, the thing that distinguishes counter-terrorism from other law enforcement is...
Full Blairite Schmittian exception type. Those counter-terrorism laws are actually the laws that were used to stop certain people at airports and things as well, that I've seen, they've seen used, and they're going to be using that now. Very interesting indeed. I happen to see there was an MP counter-signalling this bill that he was talking about. This woman here called Aspana Begum. I'll just share with you my screen here. She was counter-signalling this, saying, suggesting that the UK risk becoming an island of strangers due to immigration is a leaf out of the far-right playbook. We know where it leads, and we will keep standing up against the scaremongering of migrants and the pandering to racism by the political and media class, okay? And she was also kind of saying that she's going to vote against this bill. And I said, who is this? Why is she counter-signalling? Like, surely she's Labour. And I had a look and I said, I was about to ask why Starmer hasn't expelled you, only to find out that he already has. So, that was interesting as well. But anyway, let's carry on.
Action earlier. You can be preemptive. You can operate in a completely different way. That's why we've gone for a package that allows law enforcement to get in much earlier. That is going through Parliament. Who is voting against that? The Tories, who caused the problem in the first place. Thank you, Jack. Martin from the Daily Mail.
Martin. Prime Minister Martin Beckford from the Daily Mail. Gary asked if you've been on a journey on net migration. Similarly, you talked about tough enforcement. One of today's measures is for foreign nationals convicted of any offence to be considered for deportation. Yet just 5 years ago, you signed a letter calling...
Yeah, that was another thing that Labour have said. If you commit a crime of any sort, stealing a Mars bar, for example, right? Out. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Any crime, you're out. Okay? If you're a foreign national. Fucking brilliant.
For the halt to a
David Blunkett special.
Deportation flight that contained, amongst others, two people convicted of rape and three of GBH. Your views have changed, haven't they?
No. I've always said that those who commit offences should be deported. I ran the Crown Prosecution Service for 5 years between 2008 and 2013, and it fell to my prosecutors on my instructions to ask for the deportations in the first place in the Crown Court. So I've been really clear. I've been in charge of cases where we routinely asked for the judge, because that's the way the system operates in those days, to add to the sentence an order at the end that there should be a deportation. So what's that? That's going back the best part of 20 years.
I shall be your deporter in chief. That's what I want him to say. Go on. Who's going to win the deportation league? Is it going to be Trump? Is it going to be Carney? Is it going to be Starmer? Is it going to be somebody else? Macron? Honestly, my money's still on Mark Carney, but we'll see.
Thank you very much. And I've got Michael from the Daily Express.
Thank you,
Michael.
Does going further mean disentangling ourselves from the ECHR and disapplying human rights laws in immigration cases?
No. I don't think that is necessary. I also remind myself that the international agreements we've signed have given us the basis for the deals that we've struck on illegal migration. So the Home Secretary has moved fast, working with other countries, to put in place materially improved deals with other countries in relation to migration. That would not have been possible if we had been saying at the same time we're about to withdraw from our international obligations.
That's the deal he signed with Maloney, which is called the Albania Plan, if I'm not mistaken.
I could give you many more examples than that, but you can't strike those deals with other countries to work more closely together on law enforcement to smash the gangs and to work on returns agreements, which is what we want to do, if in the next breath you're saying you don't believe in international law. If you do, you can strike the deals. If you don't, you can't. And one of the features of the last government is they struggled to strike these deals because other countries said, if you don't comply with international law, why should we write and agree an international agreement with you, which to me is plain common sense.
Full force of the international law.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
So there we are. He's gone. All right, well, you know, let's hope that this is the start of a new chapter in the history of this country. I really hope that Labour start delivering on some of this. And absolutely, every single person should hold the government to account to make sure that the government is doing what it's promised to do, okay, and that the country is actually working for the British people for a change, rather than for any Tom, Dick and Harry from around the world. Let's have a look at some super chats and some super thanks. Let's have a look what people have been saying. First of all, I'll go over the super thanks and then we'll do the super chats. Okay, so a week ago, there was office hours concerning elite theory, says Ken Nahara. I remember you from last week. I wish to clarify, the social sciences include progress, equality, economics, morality, power, and politics. Economic equality can be achieved because the value of goods is subjective, as George Orwell stated. The elite theory described in your video is likely what the elites in Europe and America believe in. A leadership that worships materialism, atheism, decadence, and requires the people whom they think they control to confirm their status as superior. To clarify, is elite theory a belief you believe as an objective truth, or that the elites in your government believe is true? You're thinking about it the wrong way, Ken. Elite theory is an objective truth, but it's not something that any of the leaders have to believe in. It's like a set of laws about how power works, that it's an organized minority as against a disorganized mass, that in order to get anything done, you need to pull on the six levers of the iron law of oligarchy, that the iron law of oligarchy confers absolute advantage to the people who are in power now due to their advantages in communications, certain skills, resources, and so on and so forth. If you read my book, The Populist Delusion, it explains all of this in detail. Now, none of the people who are involved in politics or involved in actually running things needs to have any understanding of elite theory whatsoever to be living it and enacting it. In fact, you could try to do something as simple as run a local chess club, okay, or run a local snooker club or sports league or, you know, any sort of organization at all, and you will very quickly come across the principles described by elite theory, okay? It is a set of descriptions of what happens when people try to organize, okay, and about how power at its core functions, how decisions and actions are made in the political sphere. That is what elite theory is about. It's not about a set of values or a set of... Most leaders in history have had no understanding of elite theory whatsoever, even if they're living it, because they, you know, they tend to believe in political formulas, which is also, or ideologies, which is also something I discuss in the book. Thomas Sean says, as regards the push of jazz, the lead up to the 1900s America was awash with various modern classical styles and influences from all over the immigrant diaspora. In Japan and France, at around the same time, an effort was made from the top down to create a modern but authentic nationally identifying folk music style. In Japan, this was Enka. In France, composers such as Bizet incorporated classical styles with traditional French folk music, following the wave of nationalist music that covered Europe from Russia. It was all academically elite-led, because they were the people who had created the high art music. The nationalist concept was, of course, imported to America. Educated men and women promoted the classical style and politics of their own inheritance. For example, see Beach, Irish nationalist, Florence Price, and visitors to America such as Dvorak. Such clashes of music and politics were unsustainable. Thus, a new nationalist style was needed. New politics necessitated new music. Absolutely fascinating details, Thomas, and I don't doubt any of it, because it's not only that jazz is top down, was a top-down imposition, or a kind of organized minority making it happen. All art and culture really has been kind of top-down historically as well, right? Okay, there are instances of organic kind of folk customs and things that bubble up, right? But anything which is a commercial proposition or anything that has the state involved is top-down. And I'm not actually against the notion of a top-down culture. As I've talked about before, if I was, you know, in the base takeover, the first thing I'd do, the absolute first thing I'd do is reinstate the BBC to its original charter and ensure that the BBC was run in a patrician, paternalistic, educational, and top-down way, okay? Much like it was when it was first instantiated, ensuring, of course, that there are safeguards in place against a left-wing or liberal takeover of the BBC, which is what happened, okay? There's also Robert Conquest's second law to think about, because the left are very good at infiltrating and putting their people into positions and so on and so forth, okay? But absolutely, a lot of good culture in history has been top-down as well, okay? My complaint is not that it was top-down. What I wanted to show in that video was how it happened. So that, and you see, what was really interesting to me is that the people who follow me, who are in art scene, like Alexander Adams, for example, or... the statue guy, the guy who does the sculptures, de Villiers, is it? I forget his name now, but they instantly understood what I was talking about, right? Because yes, I don't like jazz and I regret that development happened, okay? But what I was showing was that is the playbook, right? Things don't happen by accident. You need to make them happen. organised minorities make them happen. And I was really interested to see that the arts and culture people immediately knew what I was getting at with that video. Whereas, you know, the kind of more slop type driven people turned it into an argument about the merits of jazz. Okay. Let's carry on. CL Lafopo says, is Studio Raider an alt account used to launder money from your secret Foundations of Tony Blair course you only share with the true aristocrats of the soul? Haha, just kidding. Keep up the good content. No, I think Studio Raider is a genuine person. Look, over the years, you get people who get excited and, you know, they end up super chatting a lot. It happens. You know, given that lots of money is being sent my way, I'm not going to complain. I do my best to answer all of the questions that are sent my way. And unless anything heinous or illegal or, you know, something I can't repeat is said, which I think YouTube filters out anyway, I will answer all of the questions I'm sent. Ken Nahara, this is on what happens when China automates everything in 2025, which was a very polarizing video. Polarizing between people who have had experience working in China, people who kind of knew what they were talking about, and other people who just wanted to Peter Zahan post, which it invariably happens when China is mentioned. You know, there were just people just saying like, oh, you know, it'll all fall apart in 5 years' time and all this sort of stuff. Actually, that port is really bloody impressive. And the reason of putting videos like that out is not to say, oh, look at China, isn't it great? It's to say, we should probably take note of this and get competitive against this, because otherwise the next century is going to belong to them. That was the point of the video, right? But some people like to do the ostrich technique of just pretending that China never achieves anything. It's obviously not the case. China is one of the great civilizations of this world. They have been around for thousands of years, the Chinese. Okay, I don't think that any good comes of pretending they haven't achieved anything, because they have. They really have. Anyway, Ken Hara says, I greatly respect the BBC for their journalism on the terror that Mao brought to China. I do business and have friends from Taiwan. The communists in China destroyed everything in China that would form a nation. The culture was destroyed and replaced with Leninist communism. A new language was invented with Harvard's help to unify the various minorities under one language. What do you think would happen if the British public learned that their goods made in China came from labor in gulags enhanced with modern technology? I honestly think that the British public know that, Ken. And I think that there's a strange kind of dual morality that goes on where everybody's kind of been aware of it, but somehow they kind of just are all right to live with it because they like having cheap goods. That's my honest answer. And absolutely, the history of communist China is devastating. I mean, I remember reading about the Gang of Four and the Cultural Revolution and absolutely brutal, brutal stuff. You know, there are other things that one can admire in Mao. I like Mao's anti-liberalism, for example. He's got some cool stuff about that. But yeah, in general, you know, bad things have happened in China too, without doubt. On the same video, Bambos Giorgio says, thanks. Does the advance of AI put the lie to the need for mass immigration? Are foreigners not sucked into the country to swell numbers so more money can be printed for MMT/chartalism? The idea is for UK citizens to become as poor as migrants rather than vice versa. Then clear out the middle class, leaving only the elites and the proles who rely on UBI from the government. Poor people spend all their money. Starmer has already said working people are those that can't write a £500 check when needed. Add in Blair's digital ID linked to digital currency and instant control over the population. The whole need for migrants to pay for pensions to swell Labour votes is a charade, or Punch and Judy, as you would say. Yes, I think all of that may well have been true. I get the impression that whatever that plan was has been halted or stopped. But that certainly was the Klaus Schwab-WEF type plan. Seems like they've pulled the plug on so much of it, as this Starmer speech we watched today suggests. I will note, though, on the subject of digital ID, if you read the white paper that Labour put out, they have introduced digital ID in there for foreign residents or foreign workers. Now, there's something called an e-visa, That means that foreigners living and working in Britain today are going to have digital ID once this white paper goes into effect. Pretty amazing, right? Once this bill is passed. How to hack a culture. This is Joey Bork. He says the political salience of AA, NJF and Spencer are unmatched. I always learn something new from you guys. Thank you for teaching me so much over the years. No one else does real research to come to novel and true conclusions like you all do. The populist delusion is a must read for anyone who is serious about learning politics and power. Thank you very much. I mean, I do think that it's true to say that the people whose work stands out are the people who research. I do agree with that. And I've always given praise where it's due. I think Scrump and Evelyn do great research. Spencer and Brahman do really interesting work and research. A little bit esoteric and a little bit contrarian for a lot of people, but there's a lot of interesting stuff in there. Stryker does great research. I'm trying to think of some other people. Devon Stack does brilliant research. You know, there are people who really do proper research, and their work is better for it. But it's easier for isn't it, for people to churn out slop. So much easier to churn out slop than to actually do work. And, you know, I understand. I run this channel. I have to make 3-4 videos a week. You know, it takes time to do to put in the hours. And I'll admit, even occasionally, I have just kind of, you know, turned in a video without doing, you know, that much research. And the times I've done that, the work has suffered for it. Work has suffered, but you know, sometimes needs must. Studio Rayner says, as a CIA director, so this is on How to Hack a Culture. As a CIA director, you take credit for every ideological shift, regardless of whether the CIA caused it to secure more funding. Whether it's true or not doesn't matter, since it will make people like you think the CIA is a competent agency. The personification of government institutions taking credit for what the free market accomplished is the CIA. The New Deal transformed the federal government into a bureaucratic, centrally planned, incompetent managerial state. Top-down change in culture tends to lead to terrible results. Well, I don't think I said the CIA was competent. I just said that they have been behind a lot of things that look like they're organic historically, as per the book, Who Paid the Piper? And, you know, if you judge them on whether those operations were successful or not, clearly they had some competence, right? There are many, many stories of their incompetence too, though. And there's an argument to say that during the Cold War, the Russians gave them the runaround more than once in many different spheres. He also says on the China video, how much can you charge for a propaganda video? I want a video about how China has managed to increase their production of human beings with genetic engineering and that they've eliminated the need for reproducing. That's the next step in progress, no? Well, I don't know anything about that. What I do know is that regardless of how they got there, that port they've built, that Yangsheng port, looks pretty impressive. That's what that video says. Son of Leviathan, this is on Deconstructing Boomer Truth, episode 1, Our Community, a very old video. Son of Leviathan says, do you respond to super chats? Yes, Son of Leviathan, this is me doing it now. He says, after watching a podcast with Daryl Cooper on World War II and Churchill, I was recommended your Boomer Truth Regime video. Oh, well, fantastic. I wonder who it was who recommended that. If it was Daryl, hats off to you. I have two questions, and feel free not to answer if you don't know. Number one, do you see the trade war with China as a step towards the inevitable end of neoliberalism? It seems like the service-based economic model has been a failure for all participants. To be honest, on China, the trade war with China could have been an end to neoliberalism. But as far as I can see, all that's being rode back now, because as I've suggested time and again, the Trump admin is full of shit. You know, it's just full of shit. Okay, and I don't care if it's unpopular to say that. That's just what's happened. Scott Bessent came out the other day and said, yeah, there's not going to be a decoupling with China now. And Trump has come out and said, there's going to be a reset with Chinese relations. We're going to have a deal. Yay. So all of that stuff about Liberation Day was absolute guff. Like I said a month ago, people didn't want to hear it then. They still don't want to hear it now. But that is just the fact of the matter. Number two, Europe and immigration. Why is the policy of adopting a citizenship by blood policy like what Italy offers avoided in public politics? A Chinese, it's because of Hitler, Son of Leviathan. It's because of Hitler. It's because of the Nazis. That's why. A Chinese friend of mine, in fact, I believe it is written into the German constitution that was written under the auspices of the Allies and the Americans in particular, post-World War II in the occupation. I think it's written that they're not allowed to have a blood law like that in Germany. A Chinese friend of mine told me that there's an operation in Poland offering passports to various countries within the EU, and he has an Irish passport, Malta passport, and a Bulgarian passport. Why refuse people who want to move back to their country of origin legally while corrupt bureaucrats sell them anyway? If you've got a spare 5 million, you can get yourself a USA gold card with Donald Trump's face on it, sold by Howard Lutnick or whatever his name is. Absolute corruption. But thanks for the super chat. I don't know. But basically, it's World War II is the ultimate reason. It's Boomer Truth is why. Because people are scared that any step back towards that is a step towards Hitler, right? Studio Rainer says, this is on, a really old video. Stray Thoughts, Episode 8. Society is always top down. Studio Rainer, this is obscure. This is obscure, Studio Rainer. You're going into, like, deep back catalog here, right? And I mean, how many views did that video get originally? I'm really interested now. Let's have a look. That video published many, many years ago. When did that video even come out? It got 6,200 views, that video. It was published on the 13th of November, 2019, and has been paywalled for most of its lifetime. What that is an obscure video. In the lifetime of that video, it has accrued 6 subscribers and made me £19, if you're interested. But anyway, going into... So, Studio Rainer is unearthing some real, real kind of, real obscure here. But anyway, he says perhaps in the past, this was the case, right? The society was always top down. But in today's world, elites are ruled by fear of nuclear war and death. No, they're not. They're not ruled by fear of nuclear war. In the past 5 years, Russia has threatened Britain with nuclear attack like 3 or 4 times, and it hasn't made the British government back down. The skirmishes in Kashmir suggest that they're not scared. Iran did a actual strike on Israeli soil, who's a nuclear power. Ukraine literally attacked Russia, who's a nuclear power. So, I mean, like within Russia. So I don't agree that they're driven by the fear of nuclear war. Not proven. In fact, I have a video called The Nuclear Bomb Paradox, which looked at this very question. If anything, the elites used to act as if nuclear weapons were real, and now no longer act as if they are real. That's the truth. Elite theory breaks apart when elites are forbidden from using their weapons. They're not forbidden from using their weapons. They use them all the time. This is why we have human rights, international law, war crimes, and other idiotic virtues. The nuclear bomb is the god of the New World Order, and until it is used, elites will be enslaved by their weapons. Nah, I don't buy any of that at all. If anything, the past 80 years have shown a decrease in the nuclear bomb as a deterrent. Nobody acts as if they're real anymore for some reason, for reasons I don't understand. Studio Arena on Western civilization doomed by its own success says, I bought many of your college preparation courses and want your recommendations for my situation. I plan to study in Switzerland. Given the academic abundance and global competition, should I prioritize rhetoric or your classical academic courses? Will competent individuals without AI, grammar checks, or the internet be scarce in the future? Both are crucial. I am unsure which suits academia's politics. Lastly, do you offer formal certification or recommendation letter after completing your course? The managerial state values knowledge only if certified by an expert. Well, you do get a certificate after you complete it. However, the main reason for doing the course is not for this is for the certificate. It's so that you're able to write. It's the actual skills that you get from it. And I always recommend people do the trivium in order. Start with writing, then logic, then rhetoric. I would go in that order. And I would also do the research course in between. Maybe do writing, research, logic, or writing, logic, research, and then the rhetoric one at the end. I would certainly do the rhetoric one last. Yes. Art Dino says, on the same video, that was the final chapter of Andre Siegfried's Character of Peoples. He says, great series, concluding from Siegfried, we can identify two broader categories of Westerners, those of West Europe, the English, the French, and the Latins, with their articulated landscape and sense of ideas, and the Westerners of the open continent with its dynamic infinitude, such as the Americans and Russians. The Germans would form a halfway house between the two. Yes, and as per a quite controversial tweet I put out yesterday, I think Siegfried should have added a chapter on the Jews, and I think the Jews should be seen as belonging to the West. Right, I know that's controversial with a lot of people, but I've read a lot of stuff on history now, and I just think it's impossible to disentangle the influence of Jewish people and Judaism, okay, both in a kind of mainstream religious sense, Christianity, in a secular sense. I'm talking about Spinoza, Freud, Marx, etc., etc., and even in an esoteric sense, with various other Jewish-derived knowledge structures and bases. I actually think that they belong to the West. And if you have a look at the history of the Jewish people, they have belonged to the West for far longer than they were ever part of anything you might call the East. And the reason I'm saying that is because within that book, in Siegfried, he was always at pains to note that that West and the Roman Empire kind of went hand in hand. And the frontier of where the West met the East, like in Roman times, was the battle with the Persians, for example. The Persians being East and the Romans being West. Well, what was in between the Roman Empire and the Persian Empire was the area that you'd call today the Levant, right? The Levant, which has Syria in it. It's got Israel in it. It's got a few other places in it as well. And historically, that area of the Levant has switched, right? It was under the Persians, then it was under the Greeks, then it was under the Romans, then it was under, way later, hundreds of years later, the Arabs came and took it over. And it's been with the Arabs ever since, okay? But the Jewish population, okay, they were there when it was under the Romans. Then they went west, and they actually went to Europe, and they weren't really, I mean, okay, a few of them were there during the period of the Arab rule of the Levant, but for most of them were in Europe during that time. Okay, so I honestly think that it's basically impossible to subdivide the Jewish diaspora from the history of the West and Western concepts. I realize this is an extremely unpopular opinion among some people, but it's just a fact, and I just don't see how you disaggregate it. I would go as far as to say that it's possibly as difficult to disaggregate them than it is to disaggregate the legacy of the Roman Empire or the legacy of somebody like Plato, right? Now, try to imagine a West without Plato. It's very difficult to do. Try to imagine a West without the Roman Empire, kind of difficult to do. I honestly think that the entire trajectory of the West would be completely different had it not included this other group, the Jewish diaspora. And certainly, I just don't, like, when you think of all those people, it seems wrong to say, well, they're Eastern. Marx was not Eastern. Freud was not Eastern. Von Mises was not Eastern. You know, various, like, Jewish mystics and whatnot, back through the passages of time in Europe, were not Eastern. Shylock wasn't Eastern. It's a nonsense to say that they were Eastern. They clearly belong to the West, for good or for ill, right? I know that's been a very unpopular thing that I've been saying, but honestly, I think that there's a deep truth to it. I'm kind of coming towards a view that a civilization is quite a large concept, quite a big unit. And within it, as the André Siegfried book showed, there are different tendencies, okay? So within the West, there's the Anglo tendency, or there's the Latin tendency, or there's the French or the German tendency, okay? Well, it's not that difficult to see there also being a Jewish tendency within the auspices of the West, okay? You know, what that means politically, I don't know. I'm just stating it as a kind of fact. That's what it seems like to me anyway. I also just cannot, like, I've been talking about Steven Spielberg recently, right? And I got a video coming out on Spielberg. Is it tomorrow? Maybe, no, next Wednesday, I've got a Spielberg video coming out. Can you imagine Spielberg being produced by India, right? I don't mean an Indian Spielberg. I mean Spielberg in India, or Spielberg in Saudi Arabia, or in Iran, or in China, or in Japan. Do you think any of those societies would have given him license to make the films that he has? Or would have kind of allowed those films to have such a centrality in their culture? I don't think they would have, because they are of the East. They have a different mindset. They have a different way about them. And for good or for ill, I think people have to recognize that. Tim Cornish says, beautiful montage. So this is a super chat on my super edit of The Kinks, Living on a Thin Line. This is called Living on a Thin Line, DJ Velvet Glove Edit, which was a kind of bit of a love letter to Britain I put together. And Tim Cornish says, beautiful montage capturing Ray Davis's vision. Beautiful, yet it makes me sad to see how far things have fallen. Yeah, kind of. Yeah, I was a bit creative when I made that one. So let's carry on. Okay. I'll carry on. So let's do the super chats here. I there's a guy in the chat saying I'm depressing. I am just depressing nihilism and cliche self-help. Right. But I mean, I don't see how anybody can say that, really. I mean, what about today's video has been nihilistic? What about any of the videos I've made recently have been nihilistic? It's just a lie that I'm nihilistic. And then, I mean, cliche self-help. I don't think you can get the sort of advice I've been giving in self-help books. It's not been particularly kind of cliched. They've been things I've said from life experience, and lots of people have thanked me for the advice they've got. And if anything, they're the opposite of nihilistic. They are all about taking control of your own life. So I just don't see how any of that is nihilistic. One thing I do, though, is insist on the facts. And I push back against things that are patently false, even if people don't like to hear it. Like, for example, a video I made earlier today, again, didn't win me any fans, but the trade deal between the UK and India will not result in infinity Indians. I know that's a simple propaganda narrative that people have put out. I know it's a quick win and it makes you feel good. But the fact is, if you look at the actual details of what I discussed there, it's not like the pro quo national security contribution deal is absolutely standard in world trade. We have got the exact same deal with dozens and dozens of countries. We got one with Switzerland. We got one with America. We've got one with all sorts of different countries. All it means is that if an Indian worker is seconded to this country, instead of paying into the NHS, they're paying into the Indian healthcare system, and vice versa. Like if an American worker is seconded from America to work in London, he still pays into Obamacare or Medicaid or whatever it's called, rather than paying into the NHS. But as I talked you through in that video, the saving that you make is offset by the cost of the visa and the paperwork you have to do, which is about $8,000 per worker. And they save about $2,000 on the NHS contribution. So it doesn't save any money, really. I mean, at best, there's the difference between how much the NHS contribution is, which is about 13% to the employer, and how much the Indian win is, which is about 12% to the employer, which is, I mean, you're still talking like 1% of somebody's wages, right? So it's not the thing that's going to lead to an absolute flood in the number of Indians in the country. It really isn't, because the incentives are not big enough, and the disincentives are significant enough that it's only going to result in, at most, 20,000, 40,000 IT workers, something like that, okay? Which is still 40,000 too many, don't get me wrong, but it's not infinity Indians, right? People don't want to hear that, because what they want is emotional confirmation for what their intuitions are, not what the facts are. That's not nihilism. That's a commitment to facts, logic, empiricism, and truth, which is always what I've done on this channel. Never been any different. Studio Arena says, Starmer is succeeding in having the largest capital exodus in British history. Does he want to rule over a bunch of animals? There has been capital flight from Britain, that is true. and I would suspect that the money men are onto that. I mean, it's not the largest in history, though. It's not the largest in history. There was the 95% top rate of tax under Harold Wilson. That was a much larger exodus, right? So it wasn't that big. It was also not a kind of decrease in capital investment in companies. It was individual millionaires choosing not to live in Britain, but moving offshore or living in a different country because they didn't want to pay the tax. That is different, right? A flight of millionaires is different from capital flight, you know, in the interest of fact, logic, truth, etc. Pardisius Paradoxum says, I am stuck in hospital for severe blood clotting in my lungs and heart. Well, I'm sorry to hear that, friend. I hope you get better soon. Been enjoying the Andre Siegfried readings while cooped up in bed. Thanks, AA. Yeah, and I have put together a complete audiobook of that. It's an absolutely massive file, and I've been sticking it through Handbrake to try to get it down to a size that I could feasibly upload to YouTube. I got the file down from 48 gigabytes down to 1.83 gigabytes now, right? I'm going to check it to see that it's not compressed to buggery. But hopefully that should still be a goer, and it's like about 8 hours long. How have I got an 8-hour video down to 1.83 gigabytes as opposed to 48 gigabytes? Well, because most of those videos are just a single image, what they can do is they can basically like, just be like, right, repeat that one image. And that takes a lot less space on the disk, basically. So hopefully that will work. Hopefully it won't be too compressed. Studio Rainer says, I wonder if the immigrants are being trained in secret to fight for Ukraine. It does sound plausible. No, I doubt it. The fighting will almost always be done by native Brits. Almost always. Apart from a few Gurkhas, of course. It's almost always the same. And the same in the American army, too. Coney says, I don't know how many British musicians do not like jazz. I'm quite intrigued by this debate. Speaking of someone who had no strong opinion on jazz beforehand. I just think it's a trendy opinion, personally. Firestorm, and also, nobody applies this argument to anything else, right? If a car is shitty, right, nobody says, oh, well, you have to be a car designer to really understand it. It's like, well, no, either the car works and it's good and it feels good to drive, or it doesn't. I mean, same with lots of things. I mean, lots of people watch football, right? They watch football. Well, if you've got a player who's constantly like tripping over his shoelaces, you know, misses every chance he has, you know, can't hit the goal with the back of a banjo, etc. Nobody says, oh, well, yeah, to truly appreciate this footballer, you have to be a professional footballer. No, nobody says that. And yet, when it comes to jazz, that's the line that's trotted out. How about bullshit? Firestorm says, and there's two in a row from Firestorm. I've been watching the Duran and AM, who I assume is Alexander Mercuris and not Apostolic Majesty, for some time, as I enjoyed their heterodox reporting on Ukraine. As time passes, I am uneasy that they're not just partisan, but on the other side, as it were. Do you have advice for shifting between anti-establishment analysis voices from possibly subversive foreign agents? I believe this ambiguity will be used in future to trap sensible centrists. Yes, I think you should be cautious. And I think that you should balance your kind of consumption diet with countervailing voices, okay? As an example, I just mentioned, I've always listened to Dickie Spencer, Dickie Spencer's been very pro-Ukraine. I've always listened to Frody. Frody's been very pro-Ukraine. And these give a kind of balance to, you know, this is something that Morgoth put out a video talking about not that long ago. I also, for my sins, listen to stuff like The Rest is Politics, right? An absolutely mainstream centrist dad show, right? Put out by Rory Stewart and Alistair Campbell. And I think, I mean, even if you don't like them or if you disagree with their politics or if you disagree with them and this or that, it's worth having a balance across, okay? And not only listening to one type of show or one type of background. Yeah. R8 says, please, God, let this be the beginning to the end of this madness in the West. Too many false dawns, though. I am skeptical. Yeah, well, I mean, after so much betrayal and so much, so many lies on this topic, really, what does anybody expect? Of course, you're skeptical. Cringe Walker says, Cringe Walker just announced, sorry, Cringe Walker says, Starmer just announced a fee for hiring foreign labor a few minutes ago. Oh, okay, so there's been an update even while I've been on air. Good. That should give us disincentive for using cheap labor. And this is what I said, though, right? Labor aren't scared of using government power to achieve stuff, whereas the Tories, due to their libertarianism, are. Coney says, does Judaism belong to the West and is finally of the West? Oh, I think I've talked about that already, Coney. So I refer you to my previous answer. I do believe that the only way to sensibly discuss that topic is by accepting that they are actually and have actually been part of the fabric of the West for a very, very long time at this point. Okay. So much so that I think it's impossible to disentangle. Okay. Now, that doesn't mean to say that you have to be like their number one fans or anything. But it is, I think, like, if you have a look at all of the times this topic has come up, the problem is always the same, which is that it's almost impossible to discuss, to have a discussion around it at all, due to the barriers that are put in place to discussing it. You know, this is like something Hilaire Belloc wrote in 1920 or whatever. And I think acknowledging that, you know, the Jewish diaspora has been part of the West for the best part of 2,000 years now, you know, is one step of the way towards like thinking, well, okay, what should be the relationship? You know, is there a role? Is there some way of, you know, coming to peace with this fact and putting bad blood under the bridge or whatever? I don't know. I mean, but I do think that it's kind of like you're putting a demand to say, well, the only true people who belong to Europe or whatever are, you know, Druids, like pre-Roman Druids or something, because that's how far back you're having to go before the histories are intermeshed in a way that cannot be disaggregated. That's how far back you have to go. That's not like you can't meaningfully talk about that, is what I'm trying to say. So there we go. Art Dino says, the biggest victory here is dialectic. Labour are taking on anti-immigration rhetoric because Starmer is facing oblivion at the Red Wall. Well, yeah, that's certainly driving it. They want to keep reform out. Camor says, AA, have you read Curtis Yarvin's Sovereign... have you read Curtis Yarvin's Sovereign Capital, Human Capital Theory? Thoughts? It's on his Substack, Migration and the Sovereign Firm. No, I haven't read that from Yarvin, I'm afraid. I haven't read that yet. He also says, I will have a look at it, though, now you pointed at me to it. He says, is there a surefire test to determine if a political force is genuine or a plant slash containment? I don't think you can ever get surefire, but I would say mainstream media coverage and push is one test, I would say. I would say anything pushed in the mainstream, by which I mean like by TV stations and newspapers and so on, has the sniff of containment about it, in my opinion. Studio Rainer says, the party told you to reject the evidence of your eyes and ears. It was their final, most essential command. Pidge says, what do you even do if you are Farage, Lamau? I mean, what Farage needs to do is strafe right, not what he's doing, which is going wetter than Labour into the centre. I just don't see how he thinks he's going to win like that. Sam 153 said, the Siegfried reading was great, really prescient thought from 1952 and applies today. Is there any English tenacity in Starmer's speech? I thought Starmer, I mean, I don't think Starmer's a great speaker, right? I don't think he's a great rhetorician, or he hasn't got great charisma. But there's a kind of quiet determinism, I guess, right? Studio Rainer says, nuclear theory trumps elite theory. An organized minority cannot do anything about mutual assured destruction. Again, Studio Rainer, they don't act as if nukes are real. I don't know how many times I need to repeat that. Go and watch the nuclear bomb paradox. Nobody acts as if nukes are real anymore. So I don't know what the reason for that is. I'm just saying that is the case. And we've had nukes since 1980, and since the 1945, 80 years ago. And it has not trumped elite theory. Elite theory absolutely explains what has happened since 1945. So let's not talk shit, shall we? James Muir says, have you read Nick Land and any thoughts on his anti-LTV reactionary Marxism? Capital as the motor of modernity's particular universal dialectic. I am a mutual of Nick Land's on Twitter, but I have never been able to read Land at all, because I just cannot make head nor tail of what he's talking about. Bonzo Pedrangle says, did Starmer take a hard right turn because the regime realized no white English people are willing to fight for them anymore? Well, that's bound to be a big driver, yes, Bozo. I think the more immediate driver is worries about reform and the council elections recently. Daniel Robinson says, if Conor McGregor miraculously wins PM in Ireland, the one populist who could have a chance in the UK might end up being Tyson Fury as a burn it all down candidate. Thoughts? I have severe doubts about Conor McGregor winning in Ireland. Seamus O'Blaine says, bring back Martin Webb from the nuclear wilderness. I'm afraid Martin Webb will never be allowed back onto the channel owing to things which crossed the line, I'm afraid. Absolutely no way back. Studio Rainer says, I think there had to have been a new sect of Judaism formed in Poland. It's the only way to explain two opposing historic accounts. I don't know what you're talking about there. Don't even know what it could refer to. Daniel Hall says, Doug Morris bit to look into. The campaign linking Michael Jackson to noticing started with his arrival at Sony. He wanted publishing owned by Jackson and didn't like that Jackson owned a little bit of Sony. Oh, I didn't know that. Well, unfortunately, the rock versus hip hop video was made last week. It comes out tomorrow. And it's got a good bit on Doug Morris in there, but I focus on his Universal years, not his Sony years. I've got a bit on his Sony time, but I didn't know that there was any Jacko kind of intrigue in there. Ken Nahara says, do you trust the information your government shares with the public? They wouldn't release data that benefits them over the truth. Well, there is the Office for National Statistics. And I would say that the statistics of this country are better than a lot of countries when it comes to releasing ethnic breakdowns, crime data. You know, there's a lot of decent data that was released by the ONS. That said, there's always reason to doubt government data. For example, people think that the real number of people in the country is possibly as much as 10 million higher than the official estimate. So there is that. TP says, do you know Anne Frank's sister appeared on Good Morning Britain and said that Soviet Auschwitz liberation photos were fabricated? Anti-Semite? I don't know about Anne Frank's sister on Good Morning Britain, I'm afraid, TP. Margot Frank, her clever older sister. She's reclaimed Austrian citizenship. Okay. Yeah, I don't know much about that. Doesn't sound right to me because she's got tons and tons of stories. She's got tons and tons of stories still now in the mainstream press. So that doesn't like, if that was the case, I'd imagine she'd be cancelled, right? But she hasn't been. Studio Arena says Judaism is just Zoroastrianism with a different flavor. So of course a Persian will be tolerant. It's your religion. I'm not sure if Zoroastrianism and Judaism are the same. I mean, there's a Zoroastrian influence, of course, but it's not the same, really. It's not the same. You don't get the kind of style of God that you get in the Torah and Zoroastrianism, really. Yeah, it's not really the same. You know, there are elements, the monotheism, of course, and some other bits and bobs, certain stories, also Zoroastrianism and Christianity, of course, but to say that they're just a different flavor is not quite true. At a certain level of remove, of course, as a perennialist, I would say this, all religions have something in common, which is they point to the same absolute, they point to the same universal truth. So finding some commonalities between all the religions is unsurprising if you believe that to be the one primordial truth. TP says, a central idiom of Judaism is, equal to the greatest sin is not to hasten the coming of the Messiah. That's very motivating and may justify a plethora of hilariously evil actions. Well, I mean, the thing is that simply saying that these people are part of the West doesn't necessarily say anything else about them. It's just that most of their history is absolutely entangled with the history of the West, you know, in a way that, I mean, I don't even know what the history of the West would look like if you remove that group. And I say this as a fact, whereas you couldn't really do that. You could do that. You could take them out of the history of the East and it wouldn't really make much of a difference. I'll just put it that way. I mean, unless, okay, you could say, well, Islam is an Abrahamic religion, right? So there is that. Okay, that's quite a major thing, I suppose. But, you know, apart from that. Okay, I think that's enough. Just double check that there hasn't been any more. Jensen just says, do not redeem. O2 Tom says, you have failed, Your Highness. I am a communist like my father before me. So be it, Miliband. Force Lightning, absolutely. Miliband needs to go immediately. I think that's I think that's it. Okay. I mean, they're not all Semites. I think the Arabs are Semites. The Jewish people are Semites. But the Persians, of course, are not Semites. They are a different race. But it doesn't really, I'm not talking racially. I'm talking about where they've actually been for most of their history. It is, and migrations are possible, you know. And, you know, if you take it back to an absurd level, nobody comes from the place that they are. Everybody migrated at some point, right? That's not like just a leftist lie. That is true, given enough time, okay? But we can't really talk meaningfully about, you know, the people of the West, right? If you only say, oh, well, you have to have been there for like 10,000 years or something. If that was the basis, hardly anybody would count. All I'm saying is that when you're getting up to over two millennia, that's kind of long enough. You know, when they talk about indigenous claims on this and that, right, various indigenous peoples, some of them have not been in the places they are meant to have inhabited as their ancient ancestral homeland, quote unquote, right, for anywhere near that amount of time, as an example, right? There are people who seriously, with a straight face, argue that America has undergone or is undergoing some sort of ethnogenesis. America's only been there since 1776, or at most since like 1603 or something like that. So what I'm saying is the timeline is so great, it's so long, that it's almost meaningless to talk about it as a kind of separate thing. It's clearly an energy or a tendency within the West that at different times recedes and at other times it has been brought to the fore. Okay, again, for good or for ill. I'm just saying that, you know, it's just no good to just try to pretend that these people, quote unquote, belong to the... I mean, clearly, they don't belong to China or Japan or Southeast Asia or even the Arabs or the Persians, who, right, those civilizations are the civilizations of the East. People of the Levant, like I said, kind of in the middle. But you'd never say that, you know, most of the famous Jewish people in history are, quote unquote, Eastern, because they're just not. It's just a fact. So anyway, let us go. James Moore has come in with a last minute super chat saying, who was the better player, Inzaghi or Del Piero? That's an absolute no-brainer, James Moore. Del Piero, obviously. Inzaghi was just like a goal poacher. Like a oh, there he is, offside again. Oh, there he is, Filippo Inzaghi, 90th minute. Little nicked goal. Inzaghi was a pure goal poacher. Del Piero is one of the best players in the world. It's an absolute no-brainer. So I don't know if that's a bet that you had or something, but obviously I'm going to say Del Piero. I mean, Del Piero was a creative player and a kind of genius, a number 10 as well as a number 9, if you want to put it that way. So yeah, it's just absolute no brainer. You know, a better question would be, who was better, Luca Toni or Del Piero? Then you've got a conversation. Or Roberto Baggio or Del Piero? Then you've got a conversation. Inzaghi, though, forget about it. Maldini's better than Nesta. Maldini over Nesta any day of the week. What else have we got? I just want to make sure, because I'm always accused of missing out last-minute super chats. Studio Rayner says, are you an atheist? I am not an atheist, Studio Rayner. I am not an atheist. I've just told you I believe in the absolute... In the one primordial truth. So in that sense, I am not an atheist, because no atheist would say stuff like that. they think I was talking new age mumbo jumbo is what they think. Juno says, have you ever visited Eric Orwell's Ozarks project? No, I have not, Juno. In fact, I do not know what that is. Cannavaro or Barresi? I mean, I loved both of those players. Cannavaro was an absolutely phenomenal centre-back. But Franco Barresi was a class apart, mate. If you'd seen Barresi in the late 80s or the early 90s, he was a class apart. You're talking about an absolutely legendary player there. So Barresi over Cannavaro. The only one of that back foot, I mean, Cannavaro was probably better than Costa Curta, right? And Nesta was probably better pound for pound than Costa Curta. But Costa Curta was a phenomenal player too. But yeah, Barresi and Maldini, we're talking like those two players are amongst the best players ever to have lived. So yeah, they're a class apart. They really are. So I know Cannavaro won the Ballon d'Or, but that's because they won the World Cup. And that World Cup winning Italy side in 2006 was shit as well. It was probably the worst Italy side in decades won the World Cup. I don't know how that happened, but that's why you won the Ballon d'Or. Any plan to stream with Philosophicat again? Well, yeah, I'm always up for streaming with her. If she's up for it. Okay. Let's get out of here. Hey, just say you pray to Ahura-Mazda, the Persian god. I don't pray to Ahura-Mazda, I'm afraid. I'm a true postmodern perennial traditionalist. True to my word. I don't want to go into anything more specific than that. I mean, Nesta was a brilliant player, Davey, right? But Nesta was a little bit of a sick note. And if you ask me, in my considered opinion, Nesta was a little bit kamikaze too, right? He was very, like, it wasn't unusual for Nesta to dive in two-footed and get a red card in a crucial match. Or, you know, like, and I always remember Nesta doing like a bicycle kick clearance off the line and stuff like that, which is amazing to see. And it's kind of really kind of, you know, flamboyant and so on. But Maldini was just more solid. He was more intelligent somehow and classier, even than Nesta. Never really put a foot wrong. Whereas Nesta, that little bit of kind of kamikaze energy about him. In fact, I'd probably pick Cannavaro above Nesta, yeah, even though Nesta had more grace, right? I always thought that Nesta, he had that capacity to get sent off in the important match, as did Costa Curta, who was more of a kind of hard man. But anyway, Aldair was not better than both. Aldair was not better than any of those Italian defenders. I don't know, to talk ridiculous rubbish. I mean, I tell you that the match, if you want to see Maldini, the match I always remember was Euro 96, right? Euro 96. It was Russia versus Italy. And Andrei Kanchelskis is in his absolute pomp. And Maldini was set as the left back against Kanchelskis in that match. You want to see a masterclass. Kanchelskis was coming out of that, you know, absolute double winning Alex Ferguson, like the double winning Alex Ferguson side. He was one of the best wingers in the world. And Maldini absolutely made him look like a chump that day. I remember he had him for pace. He had him slide tackles in that match. I will always remember it. Let us get out of here. Let us get out of here before I get sucked into a vortex of mid-90s football nostalgia. Pick up a course at the academic agency. And I'll see you soon.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.